Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
282 years ago, one of the greatest American leaders, both in the battlefield and in public office, was born into a modest family in rural Virginia. In the two centuries since, his name has become celebrated and his legacy cherished by Americans nationwide. George Washington remains one of our most prized national treasures. In his new book, Washington's Revolution, The Making of America's First Leader, Bancroft Prize winner and Pulitzer Prize finalist Robert Middlecoff offers a perspective on Washington as a military leader, focusing on Washington's formative years in Virginia and then on the battlefields of the French and Indian and Revolutionary Wars. He digs deeper into the psyche of a man who is remembered not just for his tactical skill, but also for his compassion for his men in battle. It's a great pleasure to welcome Robert Middlecoff to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you.
What brought you to the idea of wanting to examine Washington's military leadership?
Well, it really began when I wrote a book that was published, I guess, about 1982, on the Revolution, a big general history. And in that volume, I certainly had something to say about Washington, and I learned quite a lot in doing it. But I always felt that I really hadn't done him up as thoroughly as I should have. And so it was a matter of interest and a matter of curiosity and digging deeper. Those were the primary motives and what really brought me to him.
Obviously, we read a lot, and there is a lot written about Washington during the Revolutionary War. You spend a good portion, almost a quarter of this book, talking about Washington during the French and Indian War. What can we learn from him during that time?
Well, we can certainly see how a young man of very considerable ability, but really very raw in his understanding, developed and grew and really matured. It took Washington several years to really master even the rudimentary skills of military life. He was very ambitious. He wanted to gain a commission in the British Army. That was one of his primary thoughts and perhaps even motives. I suppose watching him grow and develop during that period and seeing him in really a very difficult situation in the early 1750s in the Old Northwest and fighting, I think is quite instructive. And it, in some strange ways, is kind of reassuring that he had such a hard time to really, first of all, master himself, and then the politics of that war and the techniques of fighting the Seven Years' War, or the French and Indian War, as it was called in Virginia.
One of the things that I found fascinating in reading your study is how good Washington was and how adept he was at talking and working with ordinary soldiers or the biggest politician and perhaps the most difficult of politicians.
Well, as far as ordinary soldiers are concerned, there was, of course, a rather deep divide between officers and men in 18th century armies, and that was certainly true in Virginia. Washington's model in that regard, of course, was the British Army, and he was in the process of becoming a full-fledged aristocrat, and he hoped aristocratic officer during that period. He had very mixed feelings about his men. I think he felt a great attachment and affection for them, along with a terrific impatience and at times even disdain for some of the things they did and how hard it was to really get them to see the need for discipline. Yeah, that was a constant struggle. As far as dealing with the governors of Virginia, governors with a small g as well as a large g, that was also a very difficult task. He had a during most of the war, he had to deal with Robert Dinwiddie, a British-appointed governor of Virginia. And he did that, I think, with commendable restraint. He didn't show the impatience that he really felt. He had a difficult time making Dinwiddie understand just what was going on the frontier and what his problems were in putting together and keeping together the Virginia regiment that he led in that war. But he did develop. He learned how to use the Virginia legislature to back him up. He had friendships there, and he was skillful in calling on his friends. But on the other hand, he wasn't one who begged for support. He didn't whine when it didn't come. He was a very firm and thoughtful man in dealing with both the mighty of Virginia and the lowly of Virginia. So it took some time, but he really did become, I think, very good at both aspects of that task.
It was interesting in what he chose to fight for. And you write in the book that he would pick his battles and he would fight for things like supplies for his men, supplies for the soldiers. And many of those battles he wouldn't win, but he was still out there fighting.
That's certainly true. He lost his share of battles. On the other hand, he kept his force intact, both in the Seven Years' War and in the Revolutionary War. He held things together well. The struggle to keep men first in the Revolutionary Army was in some ways a continuation of troubles and difficulty in keeping the Virginia Regiment together. The rate of desertion was high in the regiment, and it was difficult to persuade men initially to join. And once he got them there, of course, they had to be trained, they had to be disciplined. Same thing held in the Revolutionary War. And it came down to keeping the army intact in both wars and getting them clothed and armed and fed. Those were really very serious struggles. Everything had to be created from the ground up. He didn't inherit or walk into a fully formed logistical service. There really wasn't anything besides fighting in the battles and leading his troops. He had to do all these other things while hoping always that support would be coming from the legislature, theoretically behind him. In the case of the Revolutionary War, he dealt with the Congress, I think, very skillfully and tactfully, and recognized their importance, even though they frequently didn't come through with the kind of support he and his army needed in terms of food and clothing and arms. He was always respectful. He recognized that there was a structure of authority in America and that civilian control was at its peak, at its apex, and should be respected. And he really did respect it. He was fighting not for military control, but for the larger interests of America. And of course, most Americans were not in the army and really didn't have a lot of understanding of what it was.
As you just indicated, he was building things from the ground up. And in your portrait, which is certainly what I loved, is so philosophical and psychological in nature, but he realized that he was building everything from the ground up and the great importance of that.
Yes, that's certainly true. He was a very thoughtful man. Because he was a quiet man, except with his intimates, his family and close friends, when he would unbend, apparently, as far as we can tell, he didn't show a lot of himself and he didn't expose himself to criticism or ridicule if he could avoid it. He was always thoughtful. He was skillful in reading any kind of situation he was in, that is, any kind of human situation and what relationships were. And I think one of the most admirable aspects of his command was his ability and his thoughtfulness in dealing with civilian authority and really defending it. He did that right to the end of his service. He stood in front of Congress and gave back his commission, praised Congress, indicated that he recognized he was very much the servant of the Congress and of the American people. So he had a nice sense of what the political proprieties and rules were, and he maintained that understanding and followed it throughout his entire service, both as a very young man and as a fully-fledged commander of the Continental Army. It was a very impressive performance as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the book is a delight and fascinating to read. It's Washington's Revolution, The Making of America's First Leader. It is published by Knopf. Robert Middlecoff, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it, and thank you for sharing your expertise.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Donahue, for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Washington's Revolution, The Making of America's First Leader. Robert Middlecoff is the author. Knopf is the publisher. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.